Hey, my name's Emma.
Hey, my name's Maddie.
And you're listening to The Pilots Pandemic. If you're looking for a snack that packs a punch, look no further than Avionola, a granola that can be taken on the go, and it's so versatile that it can be eaten as a snack or as a meal.
We love Avionola because of its nutritional content. Lots of granolas have a high sugar content, but not Avionola. This granola is sweetened with monk fruit, so it actually doesn't spike your blood sugar, and it's a great option for those who may be diabetic or looking for a low sugar alternative compared to other granolas. I mean, what could be better than a granola that only has 1 gram of sugar?
Not to mention it's keto approved, so that means it's only got 1 gram of carbohydrates, and this is because it's made with lupini beans. And y'all, I have to tell you right now, I would have no idea this wasn't made from a grain because it tastes so good. So go grab yourself a bag of Avionola at avi-foods.com and upgrade your granola fix right now. Use our code PILOTSPANDEMIC for 15% off your first order. Hey y'all, welcome back to this week's episode of the Pilots Pandemic Podcast. You're here with your host Emma and our beautiful co-host Maddie.
What's up, you guys?
And this week we are joined by our guest Zach Friedman. Zach, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you guys for having me. It's an honor to be on.
Thank you, Zach. Yeah, as always, we like to kind of introduce how we met Zach. So I randomly just saw a comment on LinkedIn that Zach had made, and it had to do with the ARC. And so I commented back and was like, hey, you should come on the Pilots Pandemic. And thankfully, you messaged me back and we connected. And I didn't honestly realize that you had a story about the special issuance process. I just knew that you're really passionate about pilot mental health. And then when you shared your story, I was like, wow, this is something that definitely needs to come on the Pilots Pandemic. So I guess our first question, as we always start off the show with, is can you share like a story or an experience that you had that really sparked your passion for aviation?
Yeah, so I'd say it probably goes back to my early childhood. My first flight I ever took, I was like 6 months old. Granted, I don't remember it, but I feel like that was really the start, of my passion and my ultimate aviation journey. As I continued to grow older, it just kept building from there. One day, I don't know, my dad and I were cleaning out like the basement and we found an old Microsoft Flight Sim joystick. I probably couldn't have been more than like 6 or 7. And I had a laptop with Microsoft Flight Sim on it. So I started flying. I don't know, the two of us would kind of just sit there in front of the laptop and try to figure it out. And then it kind of really just kept going from there. As I grew older, I got into, having model planes. There's like a whole collection of 1200 and 1400 series. So I invested a lot of time into that. And then again, just with age and maturity, I started when we would go on family trips, I would be the one to look at the flights. I would send my dad the best options. Or sometimes I would send him the best plane we would be on, just because, it was really sentimental to me, that, I was a part of now our family vacation. And then up until, I started actually working on flying myself, it was kind of all these aspects that just accumulated, and continued to grow.
That's cute. I love that your parents are like so supportive of you. I see all the time. I think it's your dad that like comments on your LinkedIn, but I really do love how supportive he is. And I think that really helps you grow your passion too, when your family is like really being like, oh yes, if you like flying, like come and plan the trips. Like my parents never did that. And I think that kind of would have been a cool experience to have myself. So really unique experience to have for you.
For sure. For sure.
So when it comes to school and starting flight school and becoming a pilot, were there any resources that you used to figure out where you wanted to go to school? I know that this is like a simple question, but it's the question that a lot of students ask when they're getting ready to open up that door for themselves. So was there a specific mentor, resource, or anyone that you asked for to seek guidance on that?
Yeah, definitely. So I kind of went into the college, planning process my junior year of high school. I knew I wanted a big school. Both my parents graduated from Wisconsin-Madison, so I grew up with the Big Ten. We went out there, watched the football games. So that already set me up where I was kind of narrowed in my options. And then as I figured out what I wanted to do or what I thought I wanted to do, which revolved around aviation, it further narrowed my choices. So kind of left me with, Ohio State, Western Michigan, Embry-Riddle. Granted, the latter two aren't Big Ten. But when I was going down that path, I was looking for people who graduated from those universities, and had experience in the industry. When I came out to tour, OSU, I believe this was probably December or November, December of 2021. I met Samantha Hodick, who she works in the Fisher Business School here, and she introduced me to a guy named Michael Hyatt, who works for Delta Airlines. So I got in touch with him and started learning about, his track. He also did aviation management, so that kind of opened me up into that realm. I really didn't know that there was a separate major for aviation management. I thought it was all kind of consolidated into aviation as a whole. So I met with him a couple times, and he definitely encouraged me, and pushed me to go down a management track. So in regards to how that's how I ultimately ended up picking my major, and then the rest kind of fell into place, being OSU was Big Ten, rah-rah, but also had the academic aspect that I wanted. But my student pilot and flying, that was all irrespective of my decision. That was not a factor. I know my mom, she from the start, she was never really pleased that I wanted to go down, a pilot route. She thought that I probably could do more. That was at the time, that was the way I wanted to go in life. But also, as we sit here now, that's changed. But yeah, it was completely irrespective of my flight lessons back at home.
Yeah, no amount of Google searching can give you what just like speaking to someone gives you. Boots on the ground, I always say it really helps to just speak to someone in person or over a phone call just about their own experience. That's the best way to learn about anything. But if you don't mind me asking, why did you choose management over? I feel like a lot of people, when they go to a university, they choose business aviation. Why management?
So here at OSU, we actually don't have like a business aviation. The aviation management is through the Fisher College of Business here. It's one of four aviation majors. The others are aviation through College of Engineering, aviation through Arts and Sciences, and aerospace engineering. Aerospace engineering was not for me at all. No way. But the actual aviation track is really difficult to get into. There's limited slots in the flight school. OSU has their own airport, but it's very limited and very difficult to get into. Most students aren't flying until end of sophomore, early junior year. And truthfully, that's if you're lucky. So again, that was a driving factor and what pushed me to be on the management side. But also, I've always loved, dealing with like analysis and data. My dad does, private equity for his job, and I've always found what he does interesting. So I thought that combining my passion with aviation, but also having a degree that would allow me to do more than aviation, would be more beneficial for my future.
You're so smart, Zach. I was like, wow, you're
Thank
really
you.
thinking. No, it's honestly, this is a great conversation to have because I don't think that young student pilots think about this when they're on the career track. So why it's so good is because if you think about being an airline pilot every 10 years, you will have most likely a furlough period. And so to have a degree to fall back on and to use is really beneficial. And a lot of people don't have that. So good job on you for doing that. I love that you network a lot. That's something that young people, I think, are afraid to do. But Zach, if you guys go and follow him on LinkedIn, you can tell that he's great at networking and talking to people. And I really think that's been of your benefit. And I think for Emma and I, we have to do a lot of networking ourselves. And obviously, if we didn't network, we would have never met you. But I also think you doing that and talking to people is really important. My husband has helped a few pilots himself get to the airlines by just, sharing the knowledge that he has and encouraging them. And I love seeing when they actually go and complete their dreams. So, thank you for sharing that with us. But I did want to know, when did you realize that seeking your first class medical might be a problem for you? And then what did you do when you learned you would have to go down the special insurance pathway?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm sure as a lot of people who follow the aeromedical process know, it's not a transparent system at all. When I first applied, or went rather when I met with my AME, I thought it was going to be real standard, a couple background questions, height, weight, little health exam, whatever. He would pass it on to the FAA and I'd be good. When I sat down with him, and I told him, or he asked, "Are you on any medications or whatnot?" And then he looked at my MedEx Express form, and he saw that I was on medication for anxiety. He just straight up said to me, "This is not going to be you walking out with your medical next week." And I looked at him. I'm like, "What do you mean?" Like, I didn't, ex you know, my there truthfully was no expectation. I really jumped into the process, like, all hands on in the moment. I looked, at starting, flight lessons and the process pre-COVID. And then once COVID hit, the thought just went out of my head. So when I sat down with him, it really just was, a complete change of perspective. And then when he said 6 months to a year, I was like, okay, but like, that's all inclusive, that's everything. I mean, obviously it turned out that that's not how it was. But my first acknowledgement of the special issuance pathway was with him in December of 2022.
Wow. So, gosh, I mean, when that happened, did you feel, were you optimistic? Were you hopeful? Or were you just like, oh gosh, here comes the flood?
I think, truthfully, in a lot of situations, I tend to see the glass half empty. I always look at the negatives before the positives. So I think in that moment, I kind of said, "Wow, this is not going how I wanted it to." But I think after the appointment, when I walked out and went back home, I kind of said, "This is all part of the process. Surely there's a reason for it." And then kind of just, my feelings continuously changed throughout the entire process. So initially I would say I was pretty disappointed. And then my perspective, I would say, shifted, I don't know, a couple weeks following the appointment. When I got that actual letter from the FAA saying they reviewed my or they received my initial application, I feel like it was kind of like an emotional roller coaster. Between
Yeah.
at least that time frame.
Yeah. In our pre-pod conversation with you, you had shared with us some wild details about your case that Maddie and I both just thought really speaks to the arcane ways of the FAA's aeromedical system. Can you walk us through some of those details that you never thought would get brought up, but they are being brought up through this process? I know one example was the topical that you use for your acne.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So I've been on different like antibiotics and topical creams for acne for years. Genetics, whatever. When I was applying, I thought nothing of it. But I did report the use of Dapsone on MedExpress, which is a topical cream used to treat acne. I don't believe it's a retinoid, but it I can't remember exactly how it works, but I went on it and I did report it because the form said report all medication, so I did. And when my Amy told me that I'm going to need to have all treating records of my use of all topicals and antibiotics, as well as continuous follow-ups with my dermatologist. I was honestly left speechless. I was on minocycline and doxycycline, very low doses. Those are antibiotics used to treat various illnesses. Because they're an antibiotic, and for inflammation, they do work with acne. But they're approved by the FAA. So I really thought nothing of it. And one of the retinoids I was on, I do believe had a conflict with the FAA, but I was on that for a very short period of time. It was the Dapsone that really got to them for one reason or another. I ended up just saying to my dermatologist, I just want to get off of all of them. It was way too much time to, go back for, prescription refills constantly. I also really wasn't seeing the result I wanted to, and they kept suggesting like Accutane, but separate reason why I didn't go on that, irrespective of the FAA. But it really just was such a lengthy process that they wanted me to go through for very simple medications that are allowed by them.
Yeah.
And there was no reason for it.
It doesn't really make a lot of sense, and I'm always baffled at the things that they pick and choose to have like an issue with or they want to look into deeper, because there are also things that people have told us that they've disclosed that you would think they would pick at and they don't. Like, for example, I think I've said it on here before, but you would think that they would take issue with like me being on birth control or something like that. That feels a little bit more, I don't know, not invasive isn't the word, but it feels a little bit more serious than a topical for acne. I just hormones are a little, I don't know, it's just different, but like it's crazy that they have an issue with a cream. That just really shocked me. Do you think, and I don't know, maybe this is a vain question. But I know like appearance means a lot to everyone. Does it kind of hurt that you're not able to maybe seek out other forms of treatment because you're worried it'll affect your medical?
Are you saying in terms of like acne?
Yes. I'm sorry. That's like a vain question, but
No, you're
I'm
good.
curious.
Thankfully, since I got off those medications, my acne hasn't been as much as a problem as it was. I feel like a lot of it was a puberty issue.
Yeah.
But I would say that if I had the opportunity to go on other acne medications without the paperwork, or go back on the ones I was on, I absolutely would do it. I have cystic acne. My mom had it. It
It's
goes back in the
painful.
family. It
Yeah.
is. So yeah, I absolutely would take the opportunity to go back on medication. But for me, the slight benefit, of not having a couple cysts here and there is not worth the hassle.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't do it either if I knew that. But it is interesting because I think about Botox, and I'm pretty sure that's fine to put into your face for women, and that it's not a reportable thing. So it is interesting that they care so much about a cream, but I think it's probably because it's probably a steroid cream, and that's why they are so worried about it. But I still that came up like during the special issuance process, like why you were submitting. They just all of a sudden were like, well, we have an issue with your cream, and then that
Yeah.
took even more time.
Yeah, when they reviewed, sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but
Oh no, go ahead.
when they reviewed my initial application after my appointment in December of 22, so I think I got that back in late January or early February of 23. It's the first section that they needed additional reports on was obviously the anxiety medication. But I was surprised too when I saw, the number two bulleted list with use of Dapsone and requesting information regarding that. I did not think it was going to be an issue because, again, it's a cream. So.
Yes. And just so our audience knows, because I don't think we've touched on why you were entered into this, why you entered yourself into the special issuance process, but if you feel comfortable sharing, I think that'll help kind of paint the picture of why this acne cream situation is so odd.
Yeah, of course. The only reason that I went through with the special issuance pathway is because my application got deferred after initial review, due to my anxiety medication. So when you get that information back, you have the option to go through SSRI decision path one, which is completely removing yourself from the medication and waiting the specified period of time. I believe it's, honestly, I don't even know. But there's a duration and then other doctor follow-up doctor appointments you have to confirm that you're stable. But getting off the medication was not an option for me. Again, anxiety is something that runs on both sides of my family for generations. I've been treated since I was 10 years old, end of fifth grade. It's something I've accepted and learned to live with. I'm on a low dosage, thankfully. Over the years, I've worked my way down and I've been stable on 20 milligrams for about 5.5 years now. There's no reason for me to get off the medication. I've tried to wean down in the past, but I'll have mood swings or whatnot. So being on a stable dose, and living my best life is no reason, to make a change for that.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's how I ended up going down decision path two, and ultimately revealing that acne becomes a problem.
Yes. Okay. Thank you for sharing that and just like how that went about and everything. So one of the things that we also talked about, like you kind of touched on this earlier, is the time it takes for you to get through the special issuance process. When we first talked to Zach, he was excited that it might get done in a year. And I always say I hate to break the bubble of, being excited for that. But I did share with him, I was like, it might take 24 months. And Zach was like, holy crap, what? So I kind of wanted to know like how that felt. Was like it shocking to you when I told you it might take 24 months? And then for now, like how has the length of the time been for you, like waiting for your medical?
Yeah, when you told me that it was 24 months, the three of us, we all saw the look on my face. I wish you got a screenshot of it. I was in awe. I really was. Like I said earlier, my AME told me that this was going to be a 6 month process, maybe 12. I had no idea it was going to be double that. And then when you shared other stories of other individuals you spoke to, going through the same process, and I spoke to some myself, I realized, wow, 24 months really is the time frame we're looking at. I would say, apart from the awe and just, the gut-wrenching feeling of, well, now I'm looking at double the time, it was honestly disappointing. Kind of leads me into the point where the length of the process of how it's affected me. I could have my private by now. I could be, I've wanted to take my dad up flying before. I could have done that. Could be working on my instrument, my multi, all the other certifications necessary to at some point become a commercial pilot. So it was, yeah, from that standpoint, very disappointing and just.
Has it been like hard for you seeing your peers excel beyond you now that you're waiting on your medical?
I mean, here at OSU, I've joined the aviation club here, so a lot of my friends do fly, and I'll see them posting on their Snapchat stories or whatnot, pictures up in the air or of the plane they're about to take up, and it does suck to see because I would love to be doing the same. I would also love to be able to fly, not on my instructor's time, back at home. If he's not around, but I want to fly, I would love that, and I can't. Would I say it's discouraging? No. If anything, it's probably more of an incentive to keep pushing, so I can reach that position one day. But it's an odd feeling for sure.
Yeah. I can't really like I can't even imagine it. And I know like it's gotta be hard. This is such a when you're between, I'd say like between 17 and 22 is some of the most formidable years. And it's all about getting on your career track. So it not panning out for you exactly like you planned, I know that's gotta be, it hurts a little bit. Understandably.
Truthfully, the whole reason I started flying so early was because all the pilots I've ever spoken to up to this day say that time is of the essence. You need your flight time. You know, the more hours you have by the time you want to get to the airlines, the better.
Yeah.
So I thought by starting early, I would have more hours than, you know, maybe other applicants in what would be a potential class for a new airline.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all an
So
hours game. It's all about building
exactly.
hours, and you could be doing that right now. And that's why it's so important to have people like you share your story, because I think we highlight a lot, and it's highlighted a lot in the media, the airline pilot's perspective. And although that is just as bad, I think it's important to highlight this. This is a serious roadblock for you and your future. And all the things that you
Absolutely.
could be doing right now, even though, you know, it's not your livelihood on the line, in a sense, it sort of is. Again, this is definitely holding you back. But we talk a lot about like support systems and how important they are, just financially or with your mental health, at work and outside of work. We had previously asked you like if this had been a financial burden, and you told us that your parents are fortunately helping you with that, because they know it's your dream. But you also mentioned that it has taken a toll on them. If you didn't have them supporting you, do you think you would still be pursuing becoming an airline pilot?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I mean, flight lessons to begin with are extremely expensive. Especially I live in, you know, the tri-state area, so they're charging as much as they can. On top of, you know, the flight lessons, they've covered or helped cover, you know, the medical aspect of it. And those appointments could not have happened without them. I mean, I don't have the money it takes to attend these appointments. Even like my initial AME appointment, that was $1,000. That's money I just don't have.
Yeah. I
So
mean,
for
how old are
sure,
you, Zach? Like, just for our audience to give them context.
I'm 18. When I started this process, I was like 16 and a half, 17. So I re like there was no income for me. I mean, what, birthday
Yeah.
money? Like,
Yeah.
yeah. So for sure, without, you know, the support system that my parents have built with me, through this process, it's made it a lot easier. But yeah, there would just be no way that I would be remotely close to where I am without them.
Which is so sad, because we're dealing with like just a shortage of everything in aviation right now, and the pilot shortage is bad. And this is a huge deterrent, because as you said, like, what income are you getting as a 16, 17, 18-year-old? Like, I had a part-time job, but it was enough to like pay for my gas. Like,
Exactly.
no 18, 19, 20-year-old just has like a casual cool $1,000 in their back pocket to spend on that kind of things on top of the cost of flight school. So, yeah, thank
Exactly. I
you
mean,
for
I had a,
pointing that out.
of course, I mean, I had a job the past 2 summers, but you know, that income was nowhere near enough to cover the, and I don't even think it comes close to how much all the medical bills have accumulated for throughout this process.
And also, just to think about that too, it's like you were probably saving that money up to fly, and now you have to spend it on all these medical costs that really are arcane tests that they want you to take. And the fact that your AME was $1,000 for initial visit, I just think that is ludicrous. So I'm really happy that your parents support you, because I always like to bring that up. A lot of people think, oh, it's really easy to go through this process, and in some ways, like, oh, they don't think about the money aspect, I think, as much as they think about, oh, just disclose and it'll be easy. But if you don't have a support system, there's no possible way to go through this process. And thank God for your parents. So thanks for
Yeah, I
sharing that
know.
with us,
Of
because
course.
I think it's important. It also points out that the system is inequitable. It's not here for everyone. Can't afford to go through the special issuance process, and you do have to have some type of income to go through it. But one of the noteworthy things that you also had mentioned was your experience with the cog screen. So I wanted you to share with us how you prepared for it, what you expected, and then the cost and the time it took.
So the cog screen was probably one of the most interesting parts of this process. My AME told me to reach out to a neuropsych, so I did. I found one in my area, a great guy, Daniel De Silva. If you're in, the Tri-State area, I would absolutely recommend seeing him, especially if you're trying to apply for your medical. He's one of a few, or the system might have expanded now. I took the cog screen almost a year ago, back in April of 23. But at the time, he was one of two neuropsychs approved to issue cog screens for aviators using the new technology, which is a program on like a Surface laptop or a Surface Pro, rather than the old machine they had, which had like a finicky stylus that sometimes wouldn't react to the user's input and that would affect their score and whatnot. So I was thankful and I had the opportunity to take the cog screen on one of the newer devices. But the actual, I guess, exam to an extent, it was a 8-part system, and it consisted of backward digit spans where I had to recall like a sequence of visually presented digits in reverse order. There was visual sequence comparison. So I had to compare like two simultaneously presented series of letters and numbers. There is symbol digit coding, where I had to substitute digits for symbols using a key, which was also followed by immediate and delayed recall of symbol digit pairs. Next section was matching to sample, which was like recognition for like a checkerboard pattern. Or yeah, anything with like a design kind of. Then there was the mannequin, which was a mental rotation task. That one required me to identify the hand in which like a human figure is holding a flag. But like the figure could be like rotated upside down, sideways, backwards, but like all at once too. And then it was like a, it was all of these are timed, but that one was a real time constraint. To see how quickly you can process like the reverse of something. Then there was the divided attention. That one I had to do, it involves visual monitoring, which is presented alone and then also in combination with the visual sequence comparison task. There was the auditory sequence comparison. That one I had just had to listen to tones and recognize whether the patterns were the same or not. There was the Pathfinder, which was visual sequencing and scanning. That one required, I think that one was involved sequential numbers, letters, and also an alternating set of numbers and letters. There was shifting attention, which was rule acquisition and rule application. So that one, I think that was more conceptual based. And then there was also the dual task, which was two tasks, each of which is performed alone and then together. The first task, if I recall correctly, was visual motoring or a visual motor tracking task. And then the second one was continuous memory, which I believe also involved serial digits. So as you can tell, very comprehensive test, mentally exhausting. That was over a 4-hour day for me, with just a lot of information to recall and spit back out in a really fast pace.
Yeah, you just like explaining the testing. And I'm glad you actually remembered all this because a lot of times I don't think a lot of aviators remember the tests that they took, but it kind of reminds me of Lumosity, but on a like higher level. And I think about it because there are some things that one that you're talking about where you have it's like a spatial one where you have to orient yourself. That one is so hard for me. So I can only imagine like being in that. And the whole thing is like your medical is weighing on this. So did you feel a lot of weight carried on your shoulders because you knew that your medical hinged off this?
100%. The entire test, my hands were super sweaty. My face was red at one point. Like the doctor asked if I need to use the bathroom, like take a break. I think a lot of it was the fact that if I did not do well on this, it would not only be another financial expense to retake the test, but also that it could jeopardize my future because I don't know if there's a set number of times you can take the cog screen before the FAA essentially like rules that, you know, you can't complete it to their standards. But I mean, just thinking about having to take that test again, and sitting through it was just honestly anxiety invoking.
Oh, for sure. I
I know.
mean,
I had to remind myself to breathe just now. I'm like, oh, geez, my palms are even sweaty. Like you talking about this, I'm like, holy shit, holy crap. I'm sorry.
no, yeah, I remember. I mean, I sat in the corner of his office. It was like a tiny table, comfortable chair. But yeah, you're like locked in there. The lights are toned down, and you're just focused on this white, bright screen flashing at you for 4 hours.
Yeah, I thought what was interesting too, Zach, that you brought up is like you dressed the part. You were like, I need to look good, and I don't want these people thinking that I have something wrong with me. Which was interesting because I didn't really think about that. That when you go into your cog screen, like you want to present yourself as someone who can fly a plane.
Yes, that day I did dress to impress. That was actually something my AME told me. He told me whenever you go in for, you know, one of these appointments or a consultation, you know, look like you're capable of doing the job. I remember I woke up for school, got dressed, went downstairs. My mom was like, "Why are you dressed so nicely for school?" I'm like, "It's not school, mom. It's a doctor appointment." So yeah, I did dress to impress.
Yeah.
So, where are you at currently in your journey? Like, do you have sort of a gauge on what your timeline's going to be? Do you have any like hopeful news that you've received recently?
So, in terms of my medical, my last correspondence, or not, I mean, not that I've corresponded with the FA, but my last appointment with my AME was December, late December, right when I got back from winter break, or right before, when I got back from school, like to go home from winter break. I had an appointment, and the correspondence with him and the FAA came back actually like just last week or something saying they received it. So this should be all the information, everything that I just submitted in that package, which was an update from my primary care provider who prescribes my medication and my psychiatrist just saying that I'm stable and there's been no changes. If those are processed within the 6 month period, I should have my decision by June, maybe July. But if they require more information or that time frame elapses and they need further updated information, it could be, you know, we're looking at another an additional 6 months, so about a year from now, I would say.
How
Which
long has it
is
been so far?
from the first time I submitted the application, it's been 2 years and 2 months, so 22 months. No, that's not right. 26 months.
Wow. I didn't
Yeah.
realize it you had submitted your paperwork that long ago.
Yeah, because the initial was in December of 2021.
Okay, wow. Jeez Louise. I know.
Yeah.
I can't. And the most annoying part is what you just said about like you don't know how much time it's going to take them to even review that packet. So by the time they get to it, it could be enough time has elapsed that you'll have to redo something or provide them something else or update them with something new. And that is a common theme that we hear amongst a lot of aviators. And I find that so unacceptable that this system, it's like not only is it already a slow process, but you're being slowed down by the system itself, like their own process, which it all it falls on their own process. But that, like, I don't know, it's ridiculous.
I totally agree. I mean, when I submitted the initial app in December of 2021, and I, you know, I heard back in late January, early February of 2022. Sure, that was only a month and a half, 2 months. But once I was actually through the deferral process and had another package submitted in June of 2022, I mean, it's you're overlapping the time you spent initially plus all the future time that you're spending waiting. So that's why the time frame is so long.
Yeah.
What
Well,
is this? Oh, sorry. I
I
have
was
one
just
more
gonna.
question.
Oh, go ahead if you have your question, because mine's gonna. I kind of want to talk about PMHC stuff with Zach after this.
Wanted to ask you one more thing, Zach. So, out of everything, this whole entire experience, what has it taught you? Is there something that you've learned through this that you'll carry with you, or a theme that carries through?
Honestly, I've learned a lot through this experience. But I would say the biggest piece I've taken away is use your voice. If you sit back and wait for something to happen, nothing's gonna happen. You need to put your foot in the door, and make a scene, make yourself and your situation known, so that people look at you and say, this is a real problem, and this needs to be addressed. If you're sitting there, no one's ever gonna know about it. My friends, when I first started becoming a public voice, they had no idea what I was going through. They just thought I was flying for fun in the background. They didn't know that I was, sitting, waiting for something to make, to make a new pathway in my life. So yeah, use your voice and put your foot out there. That was probably the biggest takeaway from this.
I think
Couldn't
that's
agree
such a
more.
great message. And I think, Zach, you've been so great about being vocal both online and sharing your story. I'm so grateful that you were open to wanting to share your story, because there are a lot of pilots out there that are very scared. It's a stigma, and it does weigh heavy on aviators, and I understand why aviators are scared. But I always say, you're only contributing to the stigma if you don't tell your story. People need to hear and see what is happening. And then that way they'll know what's going on, because as long as you stay in the dark, the FAA can just pretend like everything is fine. And I think through this podcast, it has really shed a lot of light on all the inaccuracies and inconsistencies of the FAA. And one of the things that I love is that when I did connect with you, Zach, you were so willing to advocate. So Zach has become a volunteer on the Pilot Mental Health Campaign, and I kind of wanted to know why you wanted to join, and what motivated you.
Up until honestly September, maybe October of this past year, 2023, I was dead silent. Obviously I had my, communications with the FAA and my AME there, where I was, voicing my concerns independently and individually with them. But on a public scale, it was really once I hit that 6 month point of not having a single correspondence with the FAA from my initial deferral application. When I realized that, the people who are in charge of our entire aviation community, or not community, but the aviation industry here in the States, if they can't communicate something so simple as we're waiting on more details from your application, or we're currently processing your application, just an update, how can we rely on them to manage our entire infrastructure? And keep everyone safe. And that kind of goes along with I love following all news, and particularly aviation news. And 2023 was not a great year, in terms of, runway incursions and whatnot. So it really made me think that there's more going on that's going wrong behind the scenes than what we're just seeing. And it extends not only from the mental health aspect and the stigma in the industry, but also other factors that contribute to runway incursions, such as, lack of sleep, controller fatigue, whatnot. So that's what really made me step out and say that I'm not just making a change for me, and for those dealing with mental health, but for the industry as a whole.
Well, I'm really grateful that you're a part of the campaign and that we get to work alongside you. But I did want to ask you, where can our audience connect with you? Because I'm sure that they are interested in making that connection with you.
Yeah, so I'm probably most accessible on LinkedIn. You can just find me by searching my name, followed by Ohio State or student pilot or aviation. Any of those should come up. You could also reach me on Instagram. My Instagram is my name followed by the numbers 21, Zachary Friedman, 21. You could send me a message there or whatnot. If you really want to reach me by email, you can. Just shoot me like an email on LinkedIn. I can forward you know, that or my number. But LinkedIn or Instagram are by far the two best ways to reach me.
Yeah, your Instagram is popping off. If you guys really want to see some awesome posts, go to Zach's LinkedIn because he really does advocate hard there. So thank you so much, Zach, for coming on. I love having this conversation with you. I'm really excited for the work that we'll get to do together. And I'm most excited because Zach is coming to our March Lobby Day at DC. So we'll get to advocate on the Hill together.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that very much.
Me too.
I know, I'm excited. It's such a good group that's going, and we had such a good time last time. I think it was Lila who said it in her episode. She was like, I don't know how, doing such a hard thing could be so fun, but it really is the group of people. But I feel like it's all in that shared connection that I feel like we all feel so strongly about this. It's that immediate bond and you really click with these people. So I'm so excited to meet you, Zach. I feel like we've already clicked with you, and I just cannot wait to meet you in person. But before we wrap this up, we're going to do some fun cues. I haven't like led fun cues in a while, so this feels weird to me right now. I'm like, oh, when I saw like it was my cue, I was like, oh, dang, okay, fun questions. So we'll
Let's
start
hear
with
what you
you,
got.
Zach. Taylor Swift or Miley Cyrus? This has been a topic of conversation on the Pilots Pandemic a lot recently. We've been talking about Swiftie a lot, but Taylor Swift or Miley Cyrus?
Oh man, people are gonna hate me for this, but I have to say I'm a Swiftie. I do like Taylor Swift's music. Her old songs are right up my alley.
Classic, classics. What about you, Maddie?
Oh, you already know. I'm not a Swiftie. I love Miley. I'm a Miley girl to the core.
I am also, I'm going with Miley just because Hannah Montana was my first concert ever.
I was gonna say I'm pretty sure Hannah Montana probably has something to do with both of your decisions.
Yes. Hannah Montana, that's way back for me. So that's just my girl, Butterfly Fly Away. Like the list goes on, Hoedown Throwdown. Like, is that the name of the song?
Yeah,
That's not the
yeah.
name of the song. I'm really embarrassed, but I really
Is it
think that
not?
is. I'm pretty sure it is. If you think it is, it is. So we're just gonna roll with that. But yeah, I love Taylor. Taylor has some classics too, so respect. All right, so next question is domestic travel or international travel?
Damn. I'm gonna say international. I don't know, the states I feel like are pretty much very similar. You know, the experience you can get international is just something else. I've been to Europe and a couple other countries. It's a completely eye-opening experience, so I got to go with international.
Yeah, I would have to say international travel just because when you're traveling domestically, I'm still so aware of my like surroundings and seeing people look at me. But when I'm in a different country, I'm like, I can be exactly who I want to be in a different country. Like I don't have to pretend. So I pick international. It's just such a different experience. The food is better, the people are so different. I love just different types of cultures. I'm really into culture. And I'm not super into American culture, so it's kind of neat to go and travel to another country and see how they do things because they do things so differently.
I just know you're walking down the streets of Europe with Hoedown Throwdown in your AirPods.
Yes, I love that. Do the hoe down, throw down. Okay, I have to choose international travel as well. I mean, who wouldn't? Like, if I'm gonna get on for me on the East Coast to go anywhere cool, I'm gonna have to fly 4 or 5 hours. All right, if I'm gonna be on a plane for that long, might as well take my butt to Europe and have me a good old European time. I absolutely love Europe and I'm like itching to go back. So yeah, international travel for me. Yeah.
Okay, next one is hoodie or zip up?
Hoodie any day, every day. I always have a hoodie on. I love my hood. I think it's so comfortable. And just the metal zipper can get so annoying. You hear it like clicking or clacking on like a chair or a wall, and like I don't know, it just grinds my gears.
Yeah, I'm not a big zipper person. So I'm gonna go with hoodie too, but like any sweatshirt in general, I feel like I'm in sweats like 70% of the time. So I love a good pullover.
We are all aligned right now. I'm definitely picking hoodie. I don't think I've ever owned a zip up. I maybe own one, and it's like an athletic like type of jacket, and it is barely ever worn. I need a hoodie. I don't like clothes that cling to me. That's something that grinds my gears.
Yeah, no, I feel that. I feel that.
Well, that is all of our fun questions. Again, thank you, Zach, so much for joining us. I really had a good time talking to you, and I just really appreciate you sharing your story, being so vocal on social media. Like you said, having a voice does make a difference. And I think highlighting student pilot stories is something that there's a real need for right now. So I appreciate you, and I appreciate everything you're doing.
Yeah, it's absolutely my pleasure. Thank you guys for all the opportunities. I really would not be where I am without, you know, that simple comment on my LinkedIn post. So yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me. It's been an honor and a true experience that's been eye-opening.
Well,
Thank you.
I appreciate you. And I will say, Zach, like, I wasn't really thinking that comment would amount to anything. So I always think, like, everything happens for a reason. And I'm really glad that I commented and that we got to have a conversation and where it's all come. So thank you.
Absolutely. And I can't wait to see you guys next month in DC too. We'll make a change there.
Hell yeah.
So, if you would like to join us in DC, or you'd like to join more people like me, Maddie, and Zach, you can join us at pmhc.org, Pilot Mental Health Campaign. We would love to have you on our team. Like I always say, it takes a village. So, join us over there. And if you don't mind, drop us a little dono. It helps us fund things like our DC flying. So, we really, really do appreciate you all for supporting us and appreciate you even more for listening. If you don't mind, leave a 5-star and/or a review if you don't mind. But yeah, that's all for this week's episode. As always, keep the blue side up and the brown side down. We'll talk next week. Bye, y'all.